Hello and welcome to this week's edition of A Hard Place with me, Dominic Searle. A Hard Place is a space to talk about the issues that directly or indirectly affect your everyday lives, as seen from a Gibraltar perspective. Well, I'm joined in the washroom studio by Nikki Calamaro, leader of Together Gibraltar. Nikki, I understand that you've got a background in education. You studied education and also an MBA from Gibraltar University. Can you tell us a little bit about your background?
Yeah, that's right. So I originally studied natural sciences, which included physics, maths, but I also did a few modules on public policy, focusing on education. And then my professional background is mostly in project management. So in gaming companies and other local firms, trying to help them kind of level up their processes and deliver results in new markets and things like that. But yeah, I've been in politics since about 2018.
And why? I mean, what's the draw to the politics then?
So I've always had an interest in politics from a very young age. I kind of dabbled in the GSDU and the GSLP youth, trying to find kind of a place to make a difference. But it always felt a bit distant. Like if you weren't part of the clique, it was quite difficult to break in and start making a difference. And it was when I was introduced to Together Gibraltar back in 2018 that I saw they had a platform where they were really opening it up to let people express their ideas, start forming ideas about policy. They were still a kind of activist group at the time rather than a political party, but they were getting involved hosting debates on everything from climate change to education policy to whether Spanish and Janito should be taught in schools. And they've always been very open, which was what attracted me to them in the first place. And ever since then, I've just tried to be as involved as I can.
I mean, I think the question, and I don't like to leave the question for the last question, I think, is one, is Together still Together Gibraltar still a political party? And, you know, there should be 2 years, there could be less, for the next election. Will you be standing? Will you present a full slate?
We are. We're certainly trying to get a full slate together. And in terms of being a party, it's something we've had a few debates about because unfortunately it does come with its downsides. Politics in Gibraltar can be very polarizing and it can create a lot of fear. People worry that by being openly associated with a political party, it might affect their career opportunities, it might affect even their families. And because of that, we have very seriously debated going back to being an activist group. But it's a fight we think is worth having because for Gibraltar's democracy to evolve, that really needs to change. People need to feel like they can have a say in politics, they can be openly associated with parties and still have opportunities, because otherwise it's always going to be the same kind of people over and over again getting into parliament, while kind of ordinary Gibraltarians from different backgrounds are left out of the decision making.
What's the core value, because that distinguishes you, say, from the government, the GSLP Liberal government or the GSD? I mean, the government has been quite proactive in diversifying Gibraltar and that. So what makes you different? Why do you need to be in politics?
I think our number one difference from the other two parties is a focus on values and character rather than on running Gibraltar like a business. One of the terms we hear in common from both parties actually is they always refer to Gibraltar PLC. And I sort of understand where that comes from. Obviously, the economy is crucial to our quality of life. It's crucial to the way we pay for the GHA, for kids to go off to university. But there's more to life and there's more to Gibraltar than GDP. So our number one thing is about bringing it back to quality of life, bringing it back to values in politics. And letting people have a say in that.
And what, I mean, do you identify with any political party or grouping in the UK that we could say, you know, like some people say Labour or Lib Dem?
Yeah, I think so. I think in some ways it's sort of like the pragmatism of the Lib Dems, I like to think, with the kind of values of the Greens. We have a lot of socialists in our party. I'm a socialist myself, so obviously we have those ties with Labour. But I think increasingly there's a lot of disappointment, unfortunately, with the way Labour are doing things in the UK and kind of similarly not sticking to their values and not campaigning for the things they believe in. So we're really taking a lot of inspiration from those politicians who are sticking to their values and who are being rewarded for it.
The economics of it, though, is always complicated. I mean, if you go back to the days of Bolzano, who obviously describes himself as a socialist, but many would say some of his policies and the way he dealt with finances were sort of Margaret Thatcher pragmatism. Yeah. And, you know, in a sense, how do you marry what you're saying with the income to sustain it? What kind of economic vision would Together Gibraltar have?
Yeah, our number one vision for the economy in Gibraltar is always about economic sovereignty, because we don't want to be reliant on anyone else, and particularly as we have been on the UK market and overwhelmingly on one market. I understand, as you say, the pragmatism around it. And in fact, I think it's amazing what Bolzano and the GSMP were able to do in the 80s, because in a very short span of time, they took Gibraltar from a military-centric, dockyard-focused economy, where Gibraltarians were in many ways almost like second-class workers or second-class citizens, to a modern-day, urban, service-based economy in a very short span of time. And I think we've really reaped the benefits from it economically. So my worry is, my problem isn't with what has happened historically. It's the fact that we made all that progress and then in some ways we sort of rested on our laurels rather than staying hungry, trying to reinvent ourselves. Obviously, we had the gaming companies come in, which Gatuana's government had a major focus on. And sometimes looking at politicians, it feels like that's the goose that laid the golden egg for Gibraltar, and that we're never going to be able to recreate what that did for our economy. But the thing is, looking at industries around the world and the economies that are really thriving, there really is space for a place like Gibraltar to keep thriving in these new industries, whether it's AI, whether it's green technology, whether it's fintech and different kinds of financial products. There's huge room. And I know there are some initiatives being done to that end, but it's the hunger that we had in the 80s that seems to have dissipated as we've gotten very comfortable.
We had coffee. I mentioned to you the Nicola Sturgeon book. Frankly, I'm sure you haven't had time to read it yet. But I think one of the things, reasons I said, you know, it was worth looking at is the lessons she's very candid about, the lessons she learned to build up her own position in politics and getting through to public and that. I mean, with an election less than 2 years away, you need to be working on that now. You need to be pressing the flesh, talking to people, getting out there, mobilizing. Are you doing that? Or are you still, is this something that's going to filter out? I mean, the time is now, isn't it?
No, 100%. I'm grateful for the candor. It's something that we've done a lot behind the scenes because of the nature, as you said, about politics in Gibraltar, where people are very hesitant to step up and put themselves in the limelight, especially around politics. And even when we ran in 2019, it was really up to the wire because people were sort of with one foot in, one foot out until the election was announced, when it was like, okay, it's make or break time. Are you going to run? So we've done that for the past couple of years in terms of behind the scenes, speaking to stakeholders, trying to recruit. But we've kind of seen that for a small party like ourselves and a party that wants to live its values doesn't work for us. So we very much want to start getting our potential candidates out there, our policies out there, as quickly as possible so that Gibraltarians can start getting to know them and start giving us feedback as well. When we hopefully in the year ahead start getting our policies out there, that's not going to be a Bible that has exactly the way we're going to hope to run Gibraltar point by point. It's going to be a framework for the goals we hope to meet. But of course, there's going to be experts for different areas, whether it's financial services, whether it's animal welfare. One of the things I've learnt doing this for a few years now is that everyone in Gibraltar is an expert in something and has like their area of passion. And one thing we really want to give people the option for, and one thing I think Together Gibraltar is there for, is to give people the microphone and help us build those policies, help us identify the changes that need to be made. And if the other parties steal them from us, because speaking to other parties, that's sometimes a fear, that you don't want to get your manifesto out too early in case people steal your ideas. Well, steal our ideas, please. We're putting them down on paper because we think it's what's for the good of Gibraltar. So whether it's myself who gets to implement that or whether it's another government that gets to implement it, we're just thankful for positive changes being made.
Well, on that note, we'll take a short break. You're listening to the podcast A Hard Place, and I'm Dominic Searle. If you have any questions or short comments, please send them to listengibraltar@outlook.com. That's one word, all lowercase, listengibraltar@outlook.com. Or just search out my name on Substack and message me. What about the relationship with Spain? How do you think that should be conducted?
So, I think very carefully, as has historically had to be the case, very pragmatically, but also the same way we need to be aware of the risks and the threats, we also need to be aware of the opportunities. It's something I think about a lot, but I don't know if we are aware how lucky we are in Gibraltar that Spain's 2023 election went the way it did, because obviously it was all looking very dire for PSOE and the left-wing bloc, and like Vox might actually be forming government. And we have to be very careful, especially as with Trump and Putin and the way the world is going, where there's almost a return to regional conflicts and regional issues. When you look at some of the voices on the Spanish right, they're very much willing to bite their nose to spite their face. Oh, I can't remember how the expression goes. But they didn't mind, and they were willing to harm the entire Gambo area if it meant putting pressure on Gibraltar. Thankfully, that didn't come to pass. We got a PSOE-Sumar coalition who, and I think this is also worth noting, which contains a lot of not just more liberal voices, but also very pro-EU, pro-institutional voices. And I think part of the success we've had in our negotiations has been in large part because you've had people like Pedro Sanchez, yes, but also people like Josep Borrell, the former foreign minister, who have always been real pro-EU voices who are focused on global institutions. And so we need to identify those people who are willing to work with us, not because they love Gibraltar or they love us, but because they believe in the greater causes like global coalitions, like alliances like the EU, and make sure that we build those partnerships out together. And I think, hopefully now, we haven't seen the details of this treaty yet, but as partners in the EU, in whatever form that takes, we hopefully will be able to have a more professional and diplomatic relationship with Spain.
We heard one of the planes passing by there, which is a reminder of the fact that our link with the UK is also extremely important. What's your position on the idea of, you know, representation in Westminster and so forth? Is that something that you think we should have, or how should that work? Because it's complicated, yeah, isn't it?
It is complicated. I'm always very wary of that one. I understand the benefits it would have and really cementing us as part of the British family. But I'm also very cautious that Gibraltar has been able to carve out quite a unique model for ourselves, where we do have self-governance for the vast majority of things. And that sovereignty, to me personally, is very, very important. As we said on the economy, I want Gibraltar to be able to carve its own future. I want Gibraltar to be able to make its own decisions. And so I'd be very hesitant for anything that gives the UK greater say in Gibraltar's governance.
We've had the issue of the principal auditor, which I know that Together Gibraltar has commented on, and it's a complicated issue. I mean, to some extent, there must be, I think, reason in the argument that actually he probably should have done the normal principal auditor's report. And if he had other issues, there were surely other ways to raise them. And I think, going back to something you said earlier, that my own impression is maybe that there was an element of using the parliamentary privilege to say things which wouldn't normally go in that report, which was a bit out of date. Yeah. Certainly as a former editor, I would have found a report from 5 years earlier not much bit historic. Mm. What is it that you can change in the governance of somewhere the size of Gibraltar, which is, you know, actually, in my own view, actually always overperforming almost rather than underperforming, because it is very small. I mean, not many places of 38,000 people have the sort of institutions from, you know, airports to firemen to police with complicated issues. I mean, how do you change that? How do you have the reporting balanced with the actual production?
So I think there's two routes forward, because obviously we're waiting for the full report from the inquiry, like everyone else. But as we did cover it, one of the things that we noticed was that beyond the allegations of corruption and malpractice, a lot of the issues were cultural issues where people were behaving in ways that were maybe encouraged or allowed by the institutions they were a part of, whether that's the RGP or whether that's in fact the government. And there weren't clear protocols or clear practices for how the correct behavior should be encouraged. I think leveling up our institutions, there's two ways we can go about it. There's the way that I've seen some people speak about online, which is that the UK needs to come in, impose direct rule for a couple of years, sort Gibraltar out. And that's something that that I'm completely against and very hesitant about, because, as I said, I think Gibraltar needs to carve its own way forward. And I think someone from abroad who might understand kind of the history of the British Parliament, but they won't understand the local context of Gibraltar, our own culture, our own institutions, our own history. And so the only approach that's left then is that we need to take a hard look at our own institutions ourselves and decide that we want to be better for our own sake, that more evolved institutions will be able to deliver better results and do better.
What about civil society then, the engagement of civil society? In other words, you know, other groupings around, other than the government, and their input into governance.
That's a big part of it. I mean, you've seen GBC in the last few years really, really step up their coverage, not just with the McGrail Inquiry, the Principal Auditor's Report, but just across the board. So obviously the press has a huge role to play, as do the opposition, for example, who I worry sometimes do try and seize on issues for political points more than they are trying to talk about cultural issues. And I understand why. I mean, it's a problem we run into as a party as well, where it's very easy for us to criticise what the government is doing and to weigh in on when something's gone wrong. But you're not going to get as much interest, at least initially, if you start pointing out those cultural issues, those institutional structural problems. But at the end of the day, if we're serious about governing and if we're serious about making Gibraltar a better place, it's those more nuanced criticisms that need to be made, because everyone can point and laugh when something's gone wrong, but actually like presenting a better path forward is what's going to make a difference.
And just one last question. If you were to win an election, how would you structure your government? And if you were to half win an election, would you form a coalition?
Yeah, so to answer your first question, I think I always frame it about investing in people, whether that's civil servants, whether that's other people in my party, or whether that's even other people in Parliament. So the number one thing would be empowering the civil service, empowering the entire public sector, to be honest, because I think one of the biggest issues we do campaign on about Gibraltar is that there's a tremendous amount of ministerial micromanagement that really holds back. I mean, we're just speaking about the strength of our institutions, and one of the things I think does hold them back is that you don't have senior leadership in government departments. You don't have even junior people feeling free to take initiative, make improvements, make suggestions. So the number one thing would be to delegate as much authority as possible to the senior civil servants and people, public sector workers and the GHA and such. Obviously, with a tremendous amount of care and tremendous amount of management of people's results. But so that they have the freedom, because at the end of the day, the people working there, whether it's in the GHA, whether it's in the tax office, they're in there every single day. No minister is going to be able to know their job and what the service users need as well as the people there. So it's going to be all about making whoever's going to govern as a minister really has to have a role as painting a roadmap, painting kind of the vision,
policy,
what they want, the policy, and also unblocking things. So there will be times when these departments run into issues. And I think, unfortunately, the role that ministers have often played in Gibraltar is feeling like they need to fix every single issue, when really what they need to do is pave the way for their own staff to be able to generate results. And that is happening. There are some ministries that are really evolving themselves, not to name any names, but I'm thrilled that we are going in that direction.
Coalition?
So in terms of a coalition, it's something we do have to be realistic about. We are a small party, and Gibraltar's election does tend to favour incumbents and people who've run before. That said, it's all about the values. At the end of the day, we spoke at the last election with the GSD, and one of the points of contention was that they very much wanted to merge with us and for us to just form part of them when, and I think rightly so, our parties have different values, and I don't think that that's necessarily a bad thing. I think, in fact, it's better for Gibraltarians to see at the ballot box that there's diverse voices, that whatever background they come from, there's someone who represents them. So for us, we would be thrilled to form part of a coalition as long as it means that we can do justice to the people who've lent us their vote, to all the activists who've helped us out over the years, and to our members who are the ones who, at the end of the day, help us shape our policies.
On that note, we join the James Wood Trio.